We're all full of lies. Mama, we're meant for the flies. And right now they're building a coffin your size. Mama, we're all full of lies. Well, mother was the warden to my legs and to my tongue. You should have raised a baby girl. I should have been a better son. If you could count on the infection, naked, amputated ones, you should have been. I could have been a better son. And when we can real play,
Chapter 19. She had ropes and pitons, gloves and boots. She had a tail of human controllers behind her as she drove the rented Audi from the mall out of town toward the distant mountains. The OK Corral. All of us were in the car with the exception of Tobias and Axe. We were in roach morph, crawling beneath the driver's seat. Fuzzy black carpet was like tall grass beneath my six legs. A long-forgotten open roll of peppermint lifesavers was a huge log, its diameter far longer than we were tall. Way, way overhead, as high as clouds, was the steel tube and coiled spring underside of the seat. Too far away to see more than huge, indistinct shadows were gigantic feet and ankles pressing on high-rise pedals. She knew we were with her. She didn't know where we were, but she knew we were watching her.
"Why don't we merely take a helicopter to this Hork-Bajir colony?"
she asked.
"You assume the colony is located somewhere high up?"
Cassie took over the job of communication. We needed to put Visser 1 off her guard, needed her to begin to see us as allies. Cassie was the one for that job.
"Obviously,"
Visser 1 snapped.
"Am I a fool? Ropes? Pitons? You would not find it from the air. It is in a narrow, hidden valley, high in the mountains. Trees would block a simple human helicopter."
She paused.
"Your troops, when they arrive, will need to cut their way in."
"My troops?"
"We are not fools either,"
Cassie said.
"You do not intend to merely arrest or discredit Visser 3. You intend to kill him. We both know that with his morphing ability, he is far more powerful than you, with your unstable human host body."
"I can deal with Visser 3.
"Can you? We have tried many times, and yet he still lives."
"Humility from an Andalite?"
"Realism from an Andalite,"
Cassie said. Visser 1 barked out a laugh.
"You're afraid of him."
"Tell her yes," I said privately to Cassie. "Tell her he's killed a lot of us."
"Yes, we were far more numerous once. Many of us have died fighting Visser 3.
A lie, of course, but it sounded real enough. Visser 1 would latch onto the information. She would think we were fools for revealing it. We wanted her to think us fools.
"Do you imagine I will be more gentle when I am in power again?"
I started to tell Cassie what to say, but she was already there, ahead of me.
"No, we simply think you will be weaker,"
Cassie said.
"The disruption of command will work to our benefit, and in direct battle, you will be easier to kill than Visser 3. Humans, controllers or not, die easily."
Again, it had the feeling of honesty. The insult would make it seem honest. And it had the added benefit of focusing my mother, Visser 1, on the danger of Visser 3. We were reminding her just how deadly Visser 3 could be.
"And yet,"
Visser 1 mused,
"and yet the casualty reports from Earth are always weighted heavily toward Hork-Bajir and Taxons. In fact, I am trying to recall when I have ever seen a report listing a human controller casualty."
My guts were ice. We had made a mistake. We had made a terrible mistake.
"What do I say?"
Cassie demanded. I... My brain wouldn't work. The thoughts wouldn't form into any sort of order. Visser 1 had just put her finger on our greatest secret.
"Say something,"
Rachel yelled.
"No, too late,"
Jake interrupted.
"Too late. let it go. No choice.
Well, well, well,
Visser One said. She knew. There was only one reason why a group of Andalite guerrilla fighters would inflict more casualties on Hork-Bajir than on humans. The Andalite guerrillas weren't Andalites. A human would spare a human life.
She knows,
Jake said.
Or at least suspects.
Yeah.
Marco.
Nothing changes, I said harshly. She was going down before. She's still going down. Not true. Before, it had all been abstract. It had been about the solution, the line from A to B. Now, it was about survival. No one could know the truth about us. It would bring our annihilation. No one could know what we were and live. Chapter 20 Visser One drove like a madwoman. The Audi tore around hairpin mountain curves at speeds that would have been high on a freeway. The roll of peppermint lifesavers had become a menace. With every wild turn or braking, it rolled suddenly, a redwood log coming downhill at us.
Has your mother always driven like this?
Rachel asked. My mother is not driving, I said coldly. But she was. My mom had always been a wild driver. It used to make my dad crazy. This was the Yerk tapping into the human host's brain. Maybe so, I amended. No need to start a fight with Rachel. Maybe this is the way she used to drive.
Yeah? Now I know where you get your driving skills.
Rachel, being nice. I laughed to myself. When Rachel started being nice, it meant things were really bad. Visser One took a hard right, and the ride turned bumpy. An understatement. The carpet jumped beneath us. We used our roach legs as shock absorbers, but there was a lot of shock to absorb. Wild vibrations that translated to the roach mind as danger. Suddenly, mercifully, the car stopped.
I have followed your directions, Andalites.
The final word was said with a half laugh. We must be at the visitor center, I said.
Good,
Rachel said.
I'm carsick.
Unpack the items you purchased. Begin to walk along the main trail. Visser Three's forces will be all over me in seconds,
she protested.
No, they'll truck you,
Jake said.
They won't move till he himself is here.
Tell that to the fool back at the mall.
He acted out of panic. He wasn't expecting you.
Visser One got out of the car and slammed the door. We waited until enough time had passed for the Visser to grab her gear from the trunk, change into the hiking boots, scarf, and gloves, and start up the trail.
Let's go,
Jake said.
Rachel, you're first. Keep low.
Rachel motored out from underneath the seat, onto the back floor mat. She began demorphing immediately, growing, sliding, shifting to keep her mutating limbs from being caught in the tight space back there. Mostly, I saw her feet. They filled my vision. Bare, of course. We'd never learned to morph shoes. Her head eventually rose above the seat back.
Okay,
she said.
We're clear, for now.
Okay, morph and go.
Rachel tried to roll down the windows, but, of course, it was power, and Visser One had taken the keys. She cracked the door on the passenger side. She morphed to Bald Eagle and took off, racing to her appointed position. If Tobias had not made it, Rachel would. If both made it, so much the better. Cassie, Jake, and I spread out throughout the car and began to demorph. If we all stayed in one place and demorphed, we'd have ended up as sardines. I demorphed on the passenger side. My head rose from the gruesome mass of bug exoskeleton. I could see through the windshield. Really see. Like a human. She'd chosen a parking space distant from the few other parked cars. Good and bad for us. No one would spot us on the way to their own car, but we'd have a long, open walk to the trailhead. I looked around. Rachel was just clearing the nearest trees. I spotted Visser One moving speedily toward the trail. She'd always kept in good shape, my mom. Although sailing had been her thing, not hiking. Jake was in the driver's seat.
Okay, we go straight to Birdmorph's. The bad guys won't be far behind us.
Or far ahead, either, I said, nodding toward the dwindling finger of Visser One.
One at a time, or we'll look like a Bird of Prey convention, Cassie said.
I began to morph to Osprey. I was closest to the open door. A few minutes later, I was all feathers and talons. I floated out through the door, landed on the gravel, and flapped into the air. I wasn't 10 feet up before I saw it. A long black limousine. It was entering the parking lot. No one goes camping or hiking in a limo.
Visser 3! I said. Heads down! He's here!
I continued flapping, flapping, fighting dead air, feeling conspicuous. Not that there weren't birds of prey in the forest, but Visser 3 knew by now to look out for hawks and eagles. The limo skidded to a stop, spraying gravel. Behind it, three big SUVs. The limo window rolled down. I was maybe 30 feet up, 40 feet downwind from the Audi. A hand thrust out of the limo window. Osprey eye saw it clearly. Saw what it was holding.
Jake! Cassie!
I yelled. The Drake gun beam fired. The front of the Audi sizzled, fried, and disintegrated.
No!
I cried. A fireball exploded from the Audi's gas tank. The entire car, what was left of it, erupted upward, spun halfway on its axis, and landed on the gravel. It was a charred shell before it hit the ground. Chapter 21
Jake! Cassie!
No answer. Nothing. Silence. Silence but for the crackling of the fire.
Rachel!
I yelled.
Jake and Cassie are... I think...
But Rachel was already out of thought-speak range.
Slam! Slam! Slam!
Doors opened and closed, and the human controllers piled out of the SUVs. Boots hit gravel. Chapman climbed out of the limo and joined the guys coming from the SUVs. And then, last, came a human who was no human. Visser 3 in human morph. He looked around, barely sparing a glance at the burning wreck of a car. A park ranger was running from the visitor center. The visitor jerked his head. The ranger sizzled and disappeared. Then, I felt those cold eyes on me. At this distance, his voice was faint. If I'd been human, I'd never have heard my death sentence.
The bird, he said. Kill the bird.
To my left! To my right! The Dracon beam scorched the air on either side of me. 2 seconds for them to aim again. 1-1000. 2-1000. I jerked left. Misses. Far to one side. And now I was further away. The nearest tree was only 15 feet away. Just in front of my face, branches burst into flame. I flared, lost speed, and dropped. I used the momentum of my fall to whip hard around the tree trunks and zoom wildly, inches off the pine needles. The Yurks wouldn't get another shot at me. Not now. Oh, God. Jake! Cassie! The burning car was burning right inside my brain. The aluminum skin had been evaporated, leaving nothing but the bones of the car. Bare aluminum posts, and fire. And, though I had not seen them except in my imagination, the singed, heat-cracked bones of my friends. What now? I asked myself. What now? The plan. Was there still a plan? I tried to think, but I could no longer see the bright, clear line. All I could see was flame. Visser 3. I'd been so busy worrying about Visser 1. I had forgotten that he was our main enemy. I had intended to harass and trick and distract Visser 1 into carelessness, but I had tricked myself. Visser 3 was going to win. He was going to kill my mother, and he would not die. He would kill her, and he would not die. I would have set up my own mother for murder by my own worst enemy. No. No, that couldn't be. I had to think. Had to think. Tobias, maybe. Rachel, maybe. They were the next step. Axe. Where was Axe? Clearing the place of campers? Scouting the location? Where? What were they doing? How? Show me the line, I begged. Show me the A to B. My friends. My mother. All my fault. And now I was lost. Nothing to do but stand and watch the horrible drama play out. No. No, the awful voice in my head said. The line was still bright and clear. The plan still worked. If Axe and Eric had done their jobs, the plan could still work. Only one thing needed to be changed. I would have to play the part of Jake.
Hello, Phantomorphs, and thank you for listening to another episode of Audiomorphs, the Animorphs Auditory Experience. As always, this is your host, Daniel. Another 3 chapters down, we're well into the thick of it now. This one's only got, I think, 30 chapters, so we're about 2/3 of the way through. I always forget how the actual, like, plan in any given Animorphs book is, like, 2 chapters worth of stuff. And it happens over the course of a couple hours. And then the rest is all set up and then the aftermath. So it always catches me by surprise when we get close to the end. Because I'm like, okay, we're building to the plan. And then it's not like we have a plan and a complication and a counter plan or anything. It's just the plan. And then however that plays out is the end of the book. Because these are like 100 pages and written for middle schoolers. But yeah, we're making progress. And I got some messages to read. So let's get through those. I got one through the my website contact form. That website is theapodcalypse.com. That's theapodcalypse, like apocalypse, but with a D in the middle. I really regret that name now, having to clarify that every time. All for a pun. For what? You know? Anyway, Shannon writes in and says, "Hello, Shannon from New Zealand here. Shout out New Zealand. My brother recently went to New Zealand for a semester abroad, I think. Seems like a pretty cool place. Got the Lord of the Rings sets over there. Seems like a pretty cool place. Just wanted to try to lighten things up with some Animorphs reminiscing. Caught your work about 6 months ago and binged up until now. I work 12 to 17 hour days. Woof, that's a lot. It's a long day. Where I have now caught up. Sorry people have been on your case about shit lately. I think I was around 7 in the late 90s when these came out in New Zealand, and read them in order till about book 20. Never even got to the end of the David saga when I was young." That's brutal. That reminds me that I didn't know Power Rangers came on daily. Mighty Morphin Power Rangers, that was a daily show. But I tried to catch it when I could because I really liked it, but, you know, I was 6, and also my parents didn't like me watching too much TV. So I, somewhere along the way, saw maybe the first or the first 2 episodes of the Green Ranger saga, which, speaking of the David saga, very similar, right? A new member enters the group, turns out to be evil. Oh no, what are we gonna do? How does it resolve? He's got them on the ropes, everything looks terrible. Ended on a huge cliffhanger, ended on, I remember this so clearly in my brain, the second or first or second episode, whichever one I saw, ends with Tommy as the Green Ranger punching them out of the Megazord. And they're all, like, on the ground, like, oh, we can't win, oh, now he's messed up Zordon, too, he's, like, ripped out all the wires in Alpha, everything looks so dire, and I didn't get to see the end of that until I was, like, 20 or 21, I think, when it got added to Netflix. I finally checked it out. Didn't even know it was a 5-parter, saga on the show. I thought it was a 3-parter, and I just missed the last part. No, it's a 5-parter. Great times. Anyway, so I empathize with that experience. I also read the Tobias Torture book. We'll leave out the number so that those who don't know can be surprised. Hang on. I also read book 34. I'll keep what the main... Oh, is it really only 34? That's coming up. I didn't realize it was so close. I'll keep the main plot of that one blank for those who wish to not know until we get there. but also read book 34, I think, so you're getting close to that one. That was and still is one of my favorites. The fill-in both gives you chills and makes you feel sorry for them at the same time. I never read any Meganomorphs or past book 20 then, so I love that I can hear them through you, and now I'm caught up. I can go back to the start and listen with my kids. I have four and two of them in the... I have four and two of them are in the age range I was when I got into Animorphs. Sorry I struggled so much on that sentence. If I had just read the whole sentence, it would have made sense to me, but I read it word by word and got tripped up there. Anyway, keep up the great work. Thanks, Shannon. Thank you, Shannon, for writing in. I enjoyed your message. Love to hear from international listeners, because I think it's very cool. So shout out New Zealand. Shout out Shannon. Shout out getting two-thirds or one-third of a very dramatic, outside the episodic norm saga, and then not getting to finish it when you were a kid. Shout out all those things. Shout out book 34, which is coming up. I'm going to try... those who are deep in the Audiomorphs lore know I tried to get some additional voice work done for the Horkbajir Chronicles, and unfortunately... that just didn't work out. There were some scheduling and personal conflicts personal situations there that just ended up making the timing not work out past the first couple of chapters. But I'm going to try it again in book 34. This time with someone I know personally. We'll talk about it more when we get there, I guess. I also have a couple of messages on the Tumblr, that's audiomorphscast.tumblr.com. First one's from Edney, who says, "Hey, just finished episode 336, that is last week's. Great episode. I know Rachel hated having ratty hair, and then the XD smiley. But I think it was smart not to have Cassie in Rachel's role because she's black. Because she's black and they are liable to say she was stealing too. Obviously, she'd be sad about Eve and could mess up the plan. I feel real bad for Jake, and I feel like it's going to get worse. Because, of course, it'll get worse." Now that's an expert Animorphs reader knowing it always could get worse. Like, they're all little soldiers, but he's the general, and then the crying face emojis. Three of them, because it's serious. And it is serious. Jake carries a heavy burden. P.S. I agree with Tim. I'm glad you're not a Zionist. I would have to leave also. Sorry that guy is still messing with you. No worries, he hasn't responded since I told him to stop listening. Maybe he has stopped listening. It's not my problem anymore. I'm glad you're enjoying it, Edney. And I agree that it had to be Rachel. Makes a lot of sense. One of the few mentions of... not racism, but like instances of racism happening in the series, right? Well, I guess this one's not technically, because it turns out the mall cop was a controller. But Marco mentions that he gets followed around in the store. It's that one, and it's Cassie in the Megamorphs, where she gets called a slur. But generally, Applegate doesn't approach race. So that was noticeable. Notable, I should say. And interesting. And then I got one more ask. This one's anonymous and just says, "How do you feel about Elfangor?" How do I feel about Elfangor? I think he's a complicated character who made some choices, and he's going to let history be the judge. Because, yeah, he did end up enlisting five children to his cause, right? He explicitly forms a child guerrilla warfare unit with his dying moments. On the other hand, they were his dying moments. It was them or nobody, right? I don't know. He's a well-written, well-rounded character. He has many great strengths, and he's got a lot of flaws, and he's made a lot of mistakes in his life. But he's always tried to do the right thing, I guess, which is all anyone can ask, I guess, huh? I don't think K.A. Applegate's ever returning to this series, in written form, but I would love to get, those years where Elfangor was, post-Andalite Chronicles, when he returns to the war effort, pre the start of this series, where he crash lands on Earth, all those years where he becomes a war hero, I think that'd be a fun time span and character to follow along. Yeah, I don't know. I think that'd be cool. Those are my thoughts on Alphangor. That's also all the messages I have. I've mentioned two of the ways you can contact me. You can use those two. And the third way is, what is the third way? It's the Gmail. It's audiomorphscast@gmail.com. And you can also tweet at me at audiomorphs, and that's where you should check if I'm ever late uploading. I don't have too much else to say, so thank you all for listening, and I will see you all next week. My name is Daniel, and believe one day the Andalites will come. Until then, we fight.